I'm Chris Boyd. Up next on Think, the Girl Scouts are not what you remember. Sylvia Acevedo blazed a trail as the first Latina to earn a master's degree in engineering from Stanford University and worked at both IBM and NASA's Jet Propulsion Lab before starting her own businesses. Now, as CEO of the Girl Scouts National Organization, she's encouraging tomorrow's women leaders to embrace science, technology, engineering, and math as life skills. We'll talk with Acevedo about her border childhood and how her own involvement with scouting helped her succeed, and we'll talk about the lessons she learned selling cookies that she's carried throughout her professional life. Our conversation starts after a short break. Sally Ride, Condoleezza Rice, Judy Woodruff, Michelle Obama, and Lucille Ball have in common? If you guessed significant cookie sales experience, gold star. All of these powerful, influential American women were once Girl Scouts. From KERA in Dallas, this is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. Sylvia Acevedo is part of their number. Before she grew up and fulfilled her dream of earning a master's degree in engineering from Stanford, she was the first Latina to do that. Acevedo was active as a Brownie and then a Girl Scout. She went on to work as an entrepreneur and a literal rocket scientist until accepting her latest challenge a couple of years ago, these days as CEO of Girl Scouts of the USA. Acevedo is devoted to honoring the strongest traditions of the organization as it prepares the next generation of women leaders with a new emphasis on badges that encourage learning about science, technology, engineering, and math. Her new memoir, geared to young readers, is called Path to the Stars, My Journey from Girl Scout to Rocket Scientist. Sylvia, welcome to Think.
Oh, thank you for being, you know, for allowing me to be here. I'm really excited.
You say it took a while to realize just how valuable your years as a Girl Scout were to you. So what made you look back and think, before you became CEO of the organization, look back and think, yeah, that really mattered?
You know, that's a really great question. And I had had this amazing career. I had worked at NASA, JPL, Jet Propulsion Labs in Pasadena, had gone to Stanford, had a technology career that had landed me in Austin, Texas, worked as an executive at Dell and did a startup successfully there. And one day in the mid-2000s, I get a call. I get a call from someone in Stanford doing an archive project. And they said, you know, you're one of the first Hispanics, male or female, to have ever gotten their graduate engineering degree from Stanford. And you're unfortunately still one of the few. And we want to know why, because actually at that time, Stanford really wasn't even recruiting where you were from. And how was it that you were prepared to, you know, be admitted to Stanford at the graduate engineering level, which is incredibly competitive because you're going against the best from China, the best from India, the best from the US, the best from all over the world. And not only did you know, get admitted, you thrived. So were your parents rich ranchers? Hardly. Were your parents college professors? Hardly. And the more they kept asking me, why did you start taking science and math and doing well at it at a time when girls like you weren't? And it all kind of came back to Girl Scouts. It came back to that magical moment when my troop leader saw me looking at the stars and she started pointing out the constellations and the planets. And she remembered that. And later on, she encouraged me to earn a science badge when all my friends were earning a cooking badge. And yes, I could earn that cooking badge too. But she said, how about earning a science badge? I didn't know in what. And so she said, well, you know, space. You were looking at the stars. And by doing that, I realized, you know, it's trial and error. I'll be honest, my first Estes rockets did not leave the desert sand. it took, you know.
But you kept at it.
I kept at it. So a lot of problem solving. You know, I learned that the sequence mattered, the chemicals mattered, the heat mattered. Just like in cooking, it really mattered in science. And finally, I had success. And as I had success and had that rocket go up in the beautiful blue New Mexico sky, I thought, I could do this. And then also, I could do science. I could do math. And so from then on, I started taking science and math. And the more you take subjects and the better I got at it, the more rewarding that was. And that put me on a path that allowed me to become, you know, a rocket scientist and get my graduate engineering degree. And at that moment, when I was having that interview with the Stanford archivist, I realized, wow, I had never thought about how impactful Girl Scouts had been in my life. And at that point, I began volunteering. And as I began volunteering again, I was put on the national board and then later asked to be the CEO. But it wasn't just me. As you started the top of your broadcast was all these other women. I mean, you know, when you look at almost every female astronaut that's been in the space, she was a Girl Scout. If you think about more than half of our female elected officials across America, Girl Scouts. Almost, you know, 3 out of 4, you know, 75% of our U.S. female senators, Girl Scouts. I go to Silicon Valley, you know, almost 80% of the female tech leaders there, Girl Scouts. It's been amazing. So it was obviously massively important to me, but it was not just me. It's this really created this real pipeline of leadership in America.
So peak enrollment of the Girl Scouts of the USA was 2003. It was nearly 4 million American girls. It's come down since then. A lot of people are saying it's hard to keep girls engaged in this kind of organization because everybody's on their phones and they're doing other things. So talk about the challenges of just convincing not just girls, but also their parents that Girl Scouts has evolved and is a 21st century organization.
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, with the advent of Title IX, suddenly girls could play sports. You know, when I was young, I didn't have the chance to play sports. Girls weren't allowed. So suddenly having that, there's another, you know, competitor in terms of after-school activities. And then in addition to that, I don't think we were as focused on clearly communicating the lifetime benefits to girls. And that's what's so exciting about where we are today. You mentioned girls all have mobile devices. Yeah, but you know, at Girl Scouts, we want to make sure she's not just a user, but she's a creator, an inventor, a designer. She's going to have those skills. As the world is being reshaped around technology, we want to make sure she's got the skills and the confidence and the leadership to be able to create that future and to be part of that. So as we describe that to parents, they're thinking, wow, okay, this is, you know, my girls learning these amazing leadership skills. Of course, we've got a huge focus on the outdoors, major partnership with the North Face, you know, making sure we're continuing to provide girls great outdoor experiences. And going outside is so important. You've got to wonder. You've got to just look at the vast universe and just, you know, think big thoughts. And we want to make sure that girls have that opportunity. The program, the Cookie program, you know, that is an amazing entrepreneurial program, and that has launched so many women to be successful business leaders. I mean, I talk to so many business women, and they say to me, you know, I got my start in the Cookie program, and I'm not surprised. And then in addition to that is what we're doing to make sure with science, technology, engineering, and math, making sure that it's relevant so that girls have these amazing skills that will allow them to thrive. And when I think about the competitive advantages it gives them to get to school, to go to college and get scholarships, that's a story we haven't told. So I'm just so grateful to have this opportunity because we have amazing service awards, the bronze and the silver, which are great activities that you do and make a difference, as all kids should be doing service projects. But the Girl Scouts Gold Award is something that demonstrates that you've made a definable, sustainable difference in the world. And that is your college essay. That is that, oh, what am I going to write my college essay about? It's your Gold Award project. And not only that, there's scholarship dollars associated with it. And then in addition to that, employers are looking for somebody who can make an impact. That's what a Gold Award is. You know, I remember this father in New York coming in just wanting to have 5 minutes with me. And I'm like, okay, I don't know what he wants, but okay. And I met with him and he just gave me this huge hug and he said, because of my daughter's Gold Award, she was accepted at one of the top universities and a full 4-year, you know, including room and board, paid for, scholarship paid for because of her Gold Award. And he said, there's no way my family could have ever afforded this. So thank you. And I don't think we've told that story enough.
So what you were taught when you first approached selling cookies to strangers was what? A very simple rule. What did you have to do?
You know, there was two things. The Girl Scout cookie program really changed my life. I know the science, you know, and having that confidence and making friends, that was really impactful and got me that confidence to start taking science and math. And my life wouldn't be where it is had I not had that. But in another way, the cookie program really opened up my life and taught me how to create opportunity. See, when I was young, we lived in near poverty. We lived paycheck to paycheck. Sometimes the money ran out before the next paycheck. And when you live in near poverty, when you live, you know, paycheck to paycheck, you don't know how to create opportunity. You really don't. So you don't know how to make something happen. You're waiting for the next paycheck. And the cooking program, I thought I was going to have to leave Girl Scouts because I didn't think I could afford it. My family could afford it. And my troop leader said, don't worry, we're going to sell cookies. And she taught me, you know, this is how you create opportunity. You set a goal, what's your vision, what's your dream? And once you've done that, then you create a plan. And then from that plan, you step it back into small steps. And then you're determined and persistent and you work it. And, you know, that sounds so simple, but I didn't know that. And for a lot of kids in near poverty or in, you know, tough situations, they don't know how to create opportunity. They just know dream, right? But how do you make that dream come true? So that was huge. And that really set me up in life because all of a sudden it's like I have the key to success. Here, set a dream, make a plan, create the steps and work the plan. So Girl Scouts was so important for that. But the other one was, never leave the side of a sail until you hear no three times.
And you were not necessarily raised in a family where women were supposed to persist after they heard no once.
Not at all. You know, all my grandparents are from Mexico. My mom was born in Mexico. My dad was born in El Paso, Texas, right on the Mexican border. And we were raised in a very traditional household. You know, my father loved being that patriarch. And, you know, it took a while for my mom to stand up to my father. I mean, he didn't want her to even get a driver's license. He didn't even want us to have a phone in the home, you know. So there was a lot about that kind of, whether it was machismo, but certainly really strong gender roles. There were things that my older brother could do that I couldn't do, and I wasn't allowed to because of that.
Like getting a library card.
Oh, my goodness, a library card. That's true. You know, my older brother, my dad used to love going to the library. My dad would take my brother. I couldn't go because I didn't have a library card, but he got a library card for my brother, but not for me. And before I could even get a library card, they said I had to save all this money. My dad did get me a ceramic black cat bank, and I began saving money, and I had to meet a certain threshold. And before, it wasn't until I made that threshold and deposited the money in the bank that I could be allowed to get a library card, right? And I loved the library card, so I was so grateful that that finally happened. But, you know, being persistent wasn't necessarily something that, you know, I necessarily learned at home. You know, when I saw my mom, you know, she couldn't drive. It wasn't until she finally had to stand up to my dad. But, you know, being taught that lesson of don't take no until you've heard, you know, don't walk away from a sale until you've heard no three times, that really mattered because, you know, you sell to your family, you sell to people at church, and everyone says yes, right? But you finally, to make my goal, I had to talk to people that I didn't really know that well, right? So it's like that neighbor that you see getting in and out of a car,
right,
but you never talk to them, right? So suddenly I thought, oh my gosh, for my goal, I have to make that, and I have to go talk to them. And the first time that happened, I went to the woman, and I said, you know, would you like to buy some Girl Scout cookies? And she said, no. And I stood there looking at her.
It's not supposed to go this way.
I know. I was thinking, troop leader Mrs. Provine said, I can't leave the side of the sale until I've heard no three times. And she looked at me like I said no. And I stood there and I said, well, is there anybody else at home that would want to buy Girl Scout cookies? And she said no again. Again, looking at me like shoo. Mm-hmm. And I just stood there and thinking, okay, that's only two. So I said, would it make anybody's day if you bought some Girl Scout cookies? And I think either to get rid of me or what, she bought one box. But that taught me the value of persistence, you know, and you know, what is your goal? Being resilient. And I think about that later on because when I was in high school, I signed up to go to college for college counseling. And the college counselor looked at me and said, came out of her office and looked and she said, why are you here? And I said, well, I'm here to go to college. And she looked at me and she said, girls like you don't go to college. Now, it's a bit harsh. It was actually at the time statistically true. But still, you know, she said that to me. And I stood up and said, I'm going to college. And I went and walked into her office and sat down. So that was the first no. And then she said, well, what are you going to study? And I said, I'm going to be an engineer. And she laughed and said, girls aren't engineers. That was the second no. But you know what? I went on and became an engineer and a rocket scientist, and here I am today.
My guest is Sylvia Acevedo. She's an engineer, rocket scientist, and CEO of the Girl Scouts of the USA. Her new book is called Path to the Stars, My Journey from Girl Scout to Rocket Scientist. If you want to join the conversation, call us. The number is 1-800-933-5372, or you can email think@kera.org. Bank. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with Silvia Acevedo. She is CEO of the Girl Scouts of the USA. She's also a rocket scientist and engineer. Her book, geared toward young readers, is called Path to the Stars, My Journey from Girl Scout to Rocket Scientist. Join us by calling 800-933-5372 or find us on Twitter at KERAThink. You were a reluctant brownie initially. Your family had just moved. Your mom felt like she needed a better neighborhood for the family. But then you didn't know anybody right away.
You know, that is a real pivotal part of the book, Path to the Stars. And I also had it written in Spanish, Camino a las Estrellas. But, you know, you're right. I don't think any kid loves moving in the middle of a school year. And I was no different. And also, I was put in this classroom where this teacher did this something really unusual, where she put all the kids that were doing well seated near her and the kids that weren't doing well seated far away from her.
No emotional damage there. No, right?
Yeah, I know. You knew exactly where you were, right? Or where you stood in that class. And I was placed in the last desk in the last row. And I'll never forget this. The boy in front of me turned and looked at me and said, "Now you're the dumbest one in class." Hmm. And so that was really not a great way to really be introduced to that school. And so I just really hated it. And I'd always want to run home. But one day there was this girl who followed me and she caught up with me in front of my house. And she said, you know, wanted to invite me to this after school program. And I said, no. And she was very persistent. And she said, go ask your mom. And I asked my mom, like most kids ask when they want the answer to be no. I was like, "Mom, there's this girl. You know, you don't have to say yes. It's just this, this, you know, thing." But I think my mom was so relieved that I was finally interested in something. Mm-hmm. You know, I had been gone from this outgoing girl to just a really withdrawn girl, always, you know, closing the door, locking the door behind me. That she's like, "Oh, great, you're interested in something." And when I went to the after-school program, because she said, "Go." When I entered into the Girl Scout meeting, it was fantastic. You know, there were girls doing so many fun things, engaged things. And I said, oh, my gosh, I want to be here. So that really is how I got an immediate friendship circle. And I'm just so grateful for that. And then also an organization that would really, you know, look out for my best interest and still to this day.
It had been a really tough year for your family.
You know, it really had, Chris. You know, I remember growing up, and we grew up on a dirt street, or another time we lived near a really busy street on an arroyo, so busy, unfortunately, our dog got hit by a car. You know, but then we lived in another neighborhood with dirt streets. You know, I remember joy. I remember laughter. I remember playing with other kids, and that's how I remembered it. But I had an older brother and a younger sister, and my younger sister was in such a hurry to catch up, like all kids are, the younger siblings, with their older siblings, right? And, you know, she lit the room with her energy, and she was going to be the smartest of us all. But one day, a meningitis epidemic swept through our neighborhood. And, you know, the only neighborhood it went through was our neighborhood. And people died, and my sister got desperately ill. And no matter what she did, my mom did, we couldn't get her fever down. And remember, my mom didn't drive. Remember, we didn't have a phone. So my mother took my sister, limp in her arms, and ran down the street yelling and begging people to take her, to help her. And so we did. Somebody took my sister, and my sister ended up surviving, but she had had such an insatiable high fever that she became developmentally disabled, special in the Special Olympics kind of way. And that changed everything in my family because, you know, for my mother, she realized, you know, one of her children had been harmed, and what she was going to make sure none of her children would be harmed again. And she knew it was only in those dirt streets where the epidemic had spread. So she moved us to another part of town. And also it caused her to stand up to my father. I remember the conversation when, in a way, she spoke to my father in a way she had never spoken to him before, saying, "I am going to learn how to drive a car. I've already made arrangements, and I'm going to take you to work, and I'm going to have the use of the car during the day." And she immediately organized getting a phone in the house. So, you know, everything, the dynamic changed quite a bit when we moved into that new neighborhood.
So I very much get from reading the book that your mother was very smart and a tough person. However, she had a lot less education than your father. Your dad was college educated, mm-hmm. bilingual. Your mom, when you were very young, spoke only Spanish. What do you think drew them together?
You know, my mom, she had that immigrant drive, right? And they met on Valentine's Day at a Baptist social. So, you know, I think my father was really drawn to my mother's outgoing personality and that drive. And, you know, she was really drawn to, you know, my father. He had plans. He was a chemist. So there was just a lot that brought them together that way. And they both were incredibly proud of their Mexican heritage and spoke Spanish and loved that kind of home life as well.
Your mom took a bold step when you were, I guess, 4 or 5, and this was before everybody went to kindergarten, but there was this new program called Head Start, and they were going around and offering it, I guess, to families that had a child that was still learning English before they entered school. A lot of people didn't want to do it, and your mom said, absolutely.
Well, you know, I was in one of the pilots for Head Start, so... And you remember, we had had a meningitis go through our neighborhood. So no one really knew what caused it. And back then, you used to get vaccinations and sugar cubes. And mm-hmm. so maybe we thought, well, maybe it was that. But all of a sudden, a government program is coming to help you. And so our neighbors, no one wanted to do it. And I think my mom, she had my older brother. She now had my sister who had special needs. And me, and there was a program in the summer for her.
So she had her hands full.
So, you know, the Head Start really helped. And I think also my mother, I was born in South Dakota in Ellsworth Air Force Base, and my father was stationed there when he was an officer in the military. And, you know, my mother really remembers that as being incredibly isolating because, you know, she only spoke Spanish. No one spoke English, right? People felt sorry for her. She came from the desert Southwest. She was not used to a Dakota winter.
Goodness.
Yeah, it was just extreme. And then a Dakota summer, mm-hmm. the humidity, the black flies, et cetera. So, you know, she remembered how important it was to learn English and obviously maintain your Spanish. So she made sure that I was part of Head Start. And I was very grateful because I had a great teacher and she understood that I'm not a crafty kid. My older brother and my younger brother are really good with their hands, and I wasn't. So I wasn't excelling at the moments where you go in for the show and tell. But she thought, well, you know, you like books, so let me get you to tell stories from your book. And she said, practice with your mother doing that in English and Spanish. And that was really great for me. It was really great instruction. It was really good dual language preparation.
And your mom later took on some leadership roles just within your Girl Scout troop. She started a troop for your sister and her peers.
Yeah, you know, what was really interesting, and, you know, when I wrote the book, Paths to the Stars, it really makes you introspective, right? Mm-hmm. And you suddenly put pieces together in your life that you hadn't really quite connected the dots before. And I realized that, you know, my troop leaders had befriended my mother. When my mother saw me come alive again through Girl Scouts, she wanted to see what this was all about. But really, her English skills were really limited. But my troop leaders met her where she was, and they said, you know, I bet you speak the universal language of food. And so they started having her bring refreshments, and she did that. And they befriended her, and they helped her learn English. And then they also helped her recognize that she had a green card. She could become a U.S. citizen. Again, that wasn't something my father had really encouraged her to do. And so my troop leaders helped my mother learn and practice English. They also helped her become a U.S. citizen. And so when I flew up from Brownie to Junior, my mother flew up herself. And thanks to my Girl Scout leader, she became a U.S. citizen. So that was really important. But my mom saw how great Girl Scouts was. Not just for me, so she said, you know, for my sister too. And so my mom started a troop at my sister's developmentally disabled school. And, you know, if anybody's worked or been with people who are developmentally disabled, the one thing they want is to be normal. And Girl Scouts normalized my sister. You know, when she put on that uniform, she was no longer that kid from that school. She was a Girl Scout. And that brought so much pride to my sister and also my mom. It taught her tremendous leadership skills. You know, one of the great things in Girl Scouts, the more you get involved, the more leadership skills it teaches you. And my mother was tapped with an amazing honor, which was to be the cookie chair. So she also ran the distribution 1 year for the cookie program. Now, remember, family, we didn't have a garage. So my mom moved out all our furniture, and we had cookies stacked floor to ceiling. And down the hallway, for a few days, you had to walk sideways because we had cookies floor to ceiling. And I begged her to have the mint cookies in my room because I love that smell.
Sleep with that smell.
Yeah. Yes, that was really great. And so, you know, it gave my mom so much confidence. And so she became active not just in Girl Scouts, but other programs as well, being active in after school programs. She would get people registered to vote. She would go work as a voting official. You know, it gave her so much confidence and really taught her how to be integrated in the U.S.
So when you're writing your own story, it can be really tempting to edit things and leave things out, especially when you're writing for young readers. You're candid here, but your parents sometimes had a troubled relationship. And I wonder if you can talk about why you felt like it was important to include that. There's some domestic violence in the book.
You know, we really wanted to make sure it was very respectful. But, you know, I realized that people go through hard times and families go through hard times, and it doesn't have to define you, and you can overcome them. And there is hope in the book. I wrote it to inspire, to give kids hope, to realize, you know, life always isn't fair. It isn't easy. You look at me and you say, oh my goodness, you've had all these things. You must be lucky. You don't realize, you know, the tragedies, the traumas, the things I've had to overcome. And while I didn't want to dwell on them, I wanted to at least introduce them in a way that was realistic, but also show them that you can overcome. My family got through those hard times, and you can too.
How did you realize you wanted to go to Stanford?
You know, so remember, I grew up in the desert Southwest. So if you're not familiar with that, that's near Las Cruces, New Mexico. There's only one desert that's more extreme, and that's the Sahara Desert. So the Chihuahua Desert is one step up. So it is a very dry.
Hence, you can leave your furniture out.
Yeah, and not worry. Season. You know, in a good year, maybe it rains 6 inches, right? So I had a really great fourth grade teacher, Mrs. Baldwin. And one day she was showing us pictures. Her son had gone around the U.S., around the world, actually, and he'd taken pictures of universities. And so she brought a slideshow of these universities. And all of a sudden, one picture came up with green verdant lawn, beautiful green hills, red tile roof, limestone, Stanford. And I just blurted out, I want to go there. You know, 9-year-old fourth grade kid. And my teacher, Mrs. Baldwin, came and walked by me and walked by my desk. And she looked at me. She said, Sylvia, that's one of the best schools in the U.S. and maybe one of the best schools in the world. And then she looked at me in my eyes and said, and you can go there. And remember, I had already learned I can make my dreams come true with Girl Scouts. And so as that 9-year-old, I set a goal that I'm going to go to Stanford. And I did.
You're listening to Think. I'm Chris Boyd. All right, let's go to the phones now. Our number is 1-800-933-5372. We have, I think it's Casey on the line in San Antonio. Hi, Casey.
Hi. Hi, Ms. Acevedo. I am a longtime Girl Scout. I've been a Girl Scout since I was 6. I've worked for council before, and now I have a troop of 40 girls. And one of the things that I've noticed throughout my time in Girl Scouting is that there has been a really big decline in Girl Scouts getting outdoors. And particularly in Texas, a lot of our camps are in very poor repair and don't give us really the opportunity to get girls outside. And for me, that was really one of the biggest draws for Girl Scouting. And so I'm wondering what the National Council and your plans are related to the outdoors.
Thanks for your call.
Yeah, thank you very much for that call. And you're right. You know, outdoors is where we started. Outdoors is part of our DNA. And if you've been following your troop leader, you've been following all our badges and programs, and we've announced quite a few new outdoor adventure badges because of the importance of the outdoors. You're absolutely right. We have, you know, in Girl Scouts, we have 112,000 acres of camps and facilities and outdoor experiences, and we absolutely understand how important it is to modernize and update them. And in Dallas, Texas, we have one of the really just national treasures called the STEM Center of Excellence. And we're using that as a really great role model. It was a World War II camp that the local council fundraised for and really made it a STEM Center of Excellence. So yes, girls continue to do great outdoor activities, you know, wonder, look at the stars, experience life, you know, put down the mobile devices, etc. But at the same time, all of our programs, all of our STEM, they're learning that. They're learning about, you know, the flora and the fauna, the types of trees that are out there. And so you will see a continued resurgence in the embracing of the outdoors. And I'll tell you an interesting story. You know, we're getting more girls outdoors, and it's so vital at this time. We had some girls come to the camp, and they were looking around, and they saw, and they said, you know, are those trees fake? And we're like, no. But what happened is they had only seen manicured trees. They'd only seen trees in parks. Mm-hmm. They'd never been outdoors. And so it's so important to get girls outdoors. And I believe it, you know, when you, down to my core, if, you know, in the book Paths of the Stars, one of the pivotal moments is when I am in an outdoor camp experience with Girl Scouts and my troop leader sees me looking at the stars. And that changes everything for me. So thank you for the call. Thanks for being a troop leader. And you are completely right. We are focused on making sure that our camps are up to date. We now have a new national model for it. We have a great new national partner, the North Face. And you're going to see a continued expansion. So thank you very much.
Do Girl Scout camps have to have strict rules these days about, like, please leave your phone at home, please leave your tablet at home, that kind of thing?
You know, it really varies because some camps have embraced being able to use and integrate the mobile devices. But what we never want to get away from is how important it is to have the people-to-people skills, right? And have times that, you know, you are experiencing the outdoors without any other filters. You know, sometimes when people try to just learn a topic like science just through a device, a mobile device, a computer device, somebody has already predefined the experience for you.
Yeah.
And at Girl Scouts, we want to make sure that a significant number of our STEM programs, our science, technology, engineering, and math programs, are unplugged. That means you can create what you want. You can wonder. There aren't any limits. And what's been amazing, what girls have done, I'm just always amazed that the type of things that girls do. Just recently, some girls came up to me and just showed me some amazing type of things that they've created glue from styrofoam.
Wow.
Because they said styrofoam's not recyclable. How can we make it so it's earth-friendly? And so they made recyclable glue from styrofoam.
My guest is Silvia Acevedo. She is CEO of the Girl Scouts of the USA. She's also a rocket scientist, and she's got a memoir out for young readers called Path to the Stars, My Journey from Girl Scout to Rocket Scientist. We'll come back to more of your calls after the break. The number is 1-800-933-5372. You can also send us a message on Twitter at KERAThink. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with the CEO of Girl Scouts of the USA, Silvia Acevedo. She is an engineer and rocket scientist, first Latina woman to graduate with a master's degree in engineering from Stanford University. Her book is called Path to the Stars, My Journey from Girl Scout to Rocket Scientist. Silvia, how often earlier in your career were you the only woman in the room?
You know, Chris, that was a really common experience. It very much was. So everybody already knows your name because they know you're that person. And, you know, even in my first job as a field test engineer, there wasn't even a bathroom for me. And I had to figure out, you know, where the nearest bathrooms were. I had to bring in a bike so I could get there quickly. I monitored my fluid intake. And it took that persistence of and never, you know, complaining, just showing up to work, doing my work. Finally, 6 weeks later, they're like, okay, she's not going to give up, all right? We're going to bring her a bathroom. So they brought in a porta potty, and it said hers on it. So, you know, frequently, you know, there were so many times that whether I was doing international, global, you know, I would be told, no, you can't apply for this job. You can't possibly be considered to lead the international operations because you're a woman. And it's like, well, but why? It's like, well, you're a woman. Well, there's a lot of women in those countries. Well, why? It's like, okay, it's not safe. Well, then I would on my own buy a ticket and go to those countries and meet with, you know, business associates and come back and say, here, I've come and gone and I'm still here. And they would have to hire me for those jobs. So, you know, it's part of why I wrote the book, because Path to the Stars is about my story, but it's my path. But what I look behind me, I want to make that a wide highway for all sorts of kids. Because what I realized is even recently, there was a report from Silicon Valley that less than 0.5% of Latinas are in any kind of leadership in Silicon Valley.
Wow.
And, you know, I was there, you know, well over a decade ago in those kind of positions. And that is just a minuscule number. And I want to make sure that there is a path for every kid to be inspired, to follow their heart, to follow their dreams. And here's how you do it. Here's how you make opportunity happen. But it's got to be bigger than just my little pioneer path. It's got to be a bigger road. And that's really what drove me to Right Path to the Stars. And then also what drives me in my job today as the Girl Scout CEO. Girl Scouts gave me and millions of women an edge in life. And I see all these girls, and I know that learning in a co-ed environment, you don't always get that opportunity. But yet in Girl Scouts, everything is organized around you. And you know, you get to try. You get to try non-traditional things. You get to try over and over. And then you can, you know, until you're successful at the level you want to be. And that gives you so much confidence. It gives you courage. You learn those skills. And that stays with you your whole life. I mean, back to that with the only woman, you know, question. I remember when I showed up to work and that there wasn't even a bathroom. And my first thought was, when have I ever been, you know, immediately problem solving, good Girl Scout trait. But when was I in a similar situation? And I thought back to camping in the Rio Doso Mountains in southern New Mexico with my Girl Scouts. And we were going on an all day hike. And my troop leader saying, what do we need? And we'd say, we need water, we need a hat, we need comfortable shoes, we need food. She's like, what else do you need? What else? And she's like, how are you going to the bathroom? You know, as a kid, it's not like, I'm not thinking about that.
Right.
But you realize, wow, for an all day, you've got to think about that. And so, you know, it really taught me the importance of problem solving. And I remember thinking, oh, wow, here I am decades later, right? I'm in a situation, there's no bathroom. How am I going to problem solve it? So instead of getting upset or anything, I just went and immediately began problem solving. So these are the kind of skills that give you that competitive edge in life. And to me, that's why there are so many trailblazing women that were Girl Scouts. There's so many leaders that are Girl Scouts in the community because it gives you all of those skills. And, you know, I wrote the book to inspire all kids to be able to dream, you know, even if they have hard circumstances, to follow their dreams. And I know if you have a daughter, you want to give her an edge in life, get her in Girl Scouts.
What year was the Girl Scouts founded?
1912.
Okay, thank you. I knew it was around a century ago. So presumably when Girl Scouts came into existence, there were a lot of assumptions about the differing interests and affinities and abilities of boys and girls. I think a lot of that has fallen away. So can you talk about why it remains important to you to keep Girl Scouts a space for only girls?
You know, we are going to continue to keep girls, you know, in Girl Scouts, keep the girl in Girl Scouts. You know, when Julia Gordon Lowe founded Girl Scouts, there was talk that even the word scout was a masculine term. You girls couldn't use that. And many of her badges were seen as, you know, breaking gender norms. Some of our badges were around electrician, carpentry, what I call, you know, that era's Twitter, which was the semaphores, you know, flags, right?
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, we were changing from an agrarian age to the age of industry. And, you know, there weren't ways for girls to show, I have this competency. And in Girl Scouts, through the badging programs, through the skills programs they were learning, that they could show those competencies. Right now, we're going from the industrial age to the age of data. And that's another fast-changing area. And it really requires girls to be good and non-traditional things like science and like math. And what we have seen over and over in the data, no matter how much schools are pushing girls in those co-ed environments, they're not persisting through. But in Girl Scouts, because that is they're in that girl-only environment, it's okay for them to try. It's okay for them to fail. It's okay for them to do things over and over until they finally master it. That is what gives girls the skills so that they're able to be successful in this world of, you know, technology and data. You know, I think back to myself, like, if I tried to do an Estes rocket competing with my brother's friends, they would never have let me even try. And if my first rocket hadn't gone up, they'd say, go, you don't know how to do it. And, you know, they'd take it all over. You know, that's still happening today. One of the most amazing things about this book tour is I've been going to, you know, middle schools. And it shocks me, STEM middle schools. Girls don't ask questions. They're intimidated to ask questions. They're not called on. You know, when the teachers say, yeah, they're never raising their hands. So I make a point of making sure that I try to call on girls. But you can really see that, you know, in those types of environment, they don't really raise their hand. They're not staying after schools for the robotics programs. They don't want to be, you know, in those environments. But yet in Girl Scouts, it's a safe environment for them. It's a safe environment for them to try new skills that may be untraditional. And we are really seeing an amazing adoption of those STEM programs in Girl Scouts.
All right, let's go back to the phones. We have Tejas on the line in Austin. Hi, Tejas.
Sylvia, this is Tejas in Austin. I won't embarrass you by saying too many nice things other than to say that, you know, I'm a big fan of yours.
Thank you, Tejas. It's great to hear your voice.
Thank you. My question is, I think, you know, the host, I think, was touched on it just now. You know, with the Boy Scouts now, you know, talking about admitting girls, they are sort of in some way encroaching on your territory. What is the impact? What has been the impact on the Girl Scouts of America?
Thanks for calling.
Okay, so it's actually Girl Scouts of the USA, Tejas. And, you know, we're solidly focusing on girls. And the amount of interest we've seen nationally has been just amazing. You know, parents ask that question, you know, is my daughter going to be safe? Is she going to be in an environment where the programming has been designed and dedicated for her? Girl Scouts, we're the experts in how girls learn and lead. And trying to teach girls, especially non-traditional topics, we know how to do that in a way that is really interesting and fascinating to girls. And that's why they keep at it. They have that persistence. In addition to the, you know, technology skills, they learn those life leadership skills, those social emotional skills that are so important. And in a co-ed environment, they don't usually get that opportunity to really excel, to learn those types of leadership skills. So for us, you know, what we're seeing is we're a tremendous resurgence in Girl Scouts. So we're really excited about what we have for the girls and what we see going forward.
Is Girl Scouts open to trans girls?
So Girl Scouts has always been inclusive. We have always been inclusive, and that is a great thing about Girl Scouts. Ever since it was founded, we're religiously inclusive as well. And so think about it. It got started in the Deep South in Savannah. So Julie Gordon Lowe made sure that there were troops that had girls that were Native American, that were Hispanic, that were African American, and of different faiths as well from the very beginning. At Girl Scouts, we accept girls as her family presents her. She and her family present.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Next up is Paul in Plano. Hi, Paul.
Hi. My question has to do with, I guess it's kind of a longitudinal aspect, if you could call it that, of the benefit of Girl Scouts. For example, what I'm getting at is, okay, there's that gap between earnings between men and women. And do these skills, these extra skills that that girls get early in life, help close that gap? Has there been any kind of study or any kind of to get to that issue of whether or not earlier participation in Girl Scouts actually helps in terms of earning power?
Thank you so much, Paul. I appreciate your call. You're listening to Think. I'm Chris Boyd.
Okay, thanks for that question, Paul. You know, I'm so proud at Girl Scouts. We have a Girl Scouts Research Institute. We're the only major organization that actually is studying girls' leadership. And the thing you asked about, exactly. We can show you with data, with longitudinal data, the longer you're in Girl Scouts, the higher earning power you have, the more that you're going to have higher academic, the happier you are in life. We have a lot of data around that. So our Girl Scout alum are really highly indexed in that. So the longer you're in Girl Scouts, the better those life outcomes. And if you have a daughter in middle school, her self-esteem goes up, not down, if she's in Girl Scout. Her ability to feel positive about the future, her ability and willingness to do something and be involved in community problem solving also increases. So thank you very much for that ability to talk about our great benefits of Girl Scouts.
All right, let's go next quickly to Joy in Houston. Hi, Joy.
Hello. So my question is, I have a daughter. She's 6 and she's autistic, and she is really interested in joining the Girl Scouts. But I've been a little hesitant, and so I was wondering if maybe you could just sort of speak about that, how troops are inclusive of girls with disabilities.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you. Yes, we've been inclusive. You know, I mentioned my sister. She was in a developmentally she was developmentally disabled, and Girl Scouts made all the difference in her life. So differently abled girls of all sorts of different capabilities, and what they bring to the world is so important. So yes, we have girls and Girl Scouts that are autistic. We have an amazing council, and they'll help make sure that you get the right kind of troop for your daughter.
You have a great story in here about wanting to take shop class and resenting the fact that you were expected in high school to take home ec. I've often thought that boys and girls should take versions of both classes somehow. But has Girl Scouts phased out some of the things that might be considered sort of gender stereotype activities?
So, you know, crafts and a variety of all those different things, they're part of our life. So, yes, we're in that. And, you know, right now, the fashion industry, $3 trillion fashion industry, is completely being remade around technology. So if you're thinking about crafts and sewing, that is looking tremendously different. We want to make sure girls are part of everything, agricultural, technology, design, legal, whatever they want in their life. We want to make sure that they have the skills so that they can excel in it.
Sometimes it's challenging when girls really love something in childhood. Something happens around, you know, adolescence, and they decide that they want to move into something else. What do you do about retention, keeping girls up through the end of high school?
So, you know, retention is really important. And one of the things that we hadn't been doing as well is really communicating the amazing advantages, the edge it gives your daughter. It gives you that daughter, your daughter, that edge to, you know, get into a college. It's your college essay if she's a Gold Award Girl Scout. It also helps you get amazing scholarships. And then also employers look at that Girl Scout experience and say, that's a real plus. We hadn't communicated that as much. And believe me, we're really starting to communicate that, because that's one of the things that has caused parents to take their daughter out thinking, oh, I've got to put her in this other program so she has an edge to get into college. Well, it's Girl Scouts. You know, it is when you look at our success factors and look at our alumni and how they are the leaders, they're the women running the banks, they're the women running industries, they're the women running, you know, running and winning in elected officials. They're Girl Scouts. And so if you want the edge for your daughter, make sure she joins.
Are there other goals you have for the organization that you are still working on rolling out?
I'm really excited about the future of Girl Scouts. I just keep thinking about so many amazing things that we have. When I think about STEM, we've only just started the technology, because the world is being remade around us. So think about, you know, all sorts of different things like blockchain technology or different aspects, you know, and then expanding our outdoors. I mean, I get renewed being outside, and I know we're going to even expand even more with that. So I'm really excited and bullish about the opportunity. And what it thrills me the most is introducing Girl Scouts to girls that maybe didn't have this opportunity, and hopefully they'll join.
Sylvia Acevedo is a rocket scientist, entrepreneur, and CEO of Girl Scouts of the USA. Her book, which is geared toward young readers, is called Path to the Stars: My Journey from Girl Scout to Rocket Scientist. Sylvia, thank you so much for making time for us.
I really appreciate it. Thank you.
If you would like to become a follower of Think on Twitter, you can do that at K-E-R-A Think. Follow me at Chris Boyd Think. You can use any podcast app to become a subscriber to the Think podcast. It is free. And if you want to find out what we have planned for the future, check out think.kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.